Hachi's staying alive, and that's the business legacy. It doesn't have to grow, or it just has to be a good place to work and to stay alive.
Hello and welcome to Trillions. I'm your host, Elise Grace, and today I'm chatting with Chairman of Hutchinson Builders, Scott Hutchinson. He's the fourth generation son in a company that was founded in 1912 in Brisbane. Hutchies is the largest privately owned construction company in Australia with annual revenue over $2.8 billion. On this episode, Scott shares the Hutchies history, how they maintain a high build standard across thousands of jobs and maintain an ideal working environment for their staff. Some great takeaways in this one. Listen up. So you're the fifth generation?
No, I'm the fourth. There is generation. A fifth. He's in the next room. And the third is here today as well, against our recommendations. My sisters have been on his case not to leave the house because he's 85, but he won't take any notice of us, and he's doing what he wants to do. Even though he knows if he gets that virus, he's very likely to die.
Aww.
So that's him.
Well, if he's in here working, it sounds like he's a fighter and he's fighting fit.
He's not working. He'll be working on rowing. And things like that. He loves rowing. He still rows.
Yeah. You guys sponsor some rowing?
We do, yeah. Mm. And we have always sponsored rowing, yeah.
Yeah. Is it Churchy or
another? Well, we've done Churchy. We've done BBC. Dad went to Churchy and I went to BBC. So we've sponsored both of those. And we've sponsored Queensland Rowing as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very cool. Yeah. Oh, that's good that he has a love for rowing, and you have a great love for music. You bought the $43 million, I think you paid for the site in the Fortitude Valley.
No, we paid $23.5 million, but we spent about 46 on it.
Okay.
Wow. And it's got valued at about 30.
Oh no.
So we've torched about $16 million. But
why is that important to you, that specific site and that venue?
Well, I grew up with Festival Hall in Albert Street as a temple. That's where I went. I didn't go to a lot of the local smaller bands. I went to the bigger bands that came out. Yeah. I wish I'd gone to some of the smaller bands now. And I saw my kids growing up without that presence in their life, which I thought was terrible.
Yeah.
And then when this site came up, I thought, oh, there's nothing better than this site. You couldn't find a better site in Brisbane to do this.
Yeah.
And it's exactly the size that Live Nation and Splendour in the Grass want. Mm-hmm. I could have made it bigger, but a band's biggest fear is playing to a half-filled stadium or a venue.
Mm. So it's a perfect size.
It, for them,
and how's it going now?
Right now it's shut, but
of course, with this virus stuff.
With this stupid virus, but it was trading its ass off. It was going really well, and March was going to be wonderful. We had the Pixies, we had the National coming out. It was going to be wonderful, but there's a lot worse happening at the moment.
Yeah. Oh well, these things happen.
Yeah.
Well, it's good that you've got it there and you've secured that for Brisbane.
And there's also, we've got Trifford as well, which is a smaller one. The Fortitude Music Hall has a capacity of 3,500. Trifford is about 800 to 1,000. Trifford's a
marvel. It's a great venue. Oh, I love that venue.
So good. And I just went to see New Order at the Sydney Horden Pavilion. And that's a comparable size to Fortitude Music Hall. There's no comparison in the experience. The experience of Fortitude Music Hall is so much better than the Horden Pavilion.
I'm yet to visit it, actually.
Oh, you've got to come.
Hopefully once it opens back up, there'll be...
Well, I can show it to you empty anytime you want at the moment.
Thank you. Well, let's touch base on your history, Scott. So Hutchies has been in business for 108 years now.
Yes.
And you're fourth generation, not fifth generation.
Yes.
Your great-grandfather came here from England. So you've now got, I've got here, correct me if I'm wrong, you employ more than 1,400 people.
Yeah, it's probably about 1,800, yeah.
Wow. So it all started with one person, your great-grandfather. So can you tell us about his work ethic and how Hutchies started?
Well, he was a builder in Manchester, or a place called Bury outside of Manchester.
Mm-hmm.
He had a disagreement with a business partner, so he came out here and landed in 1911 and started pretty quickly. We may have started in 1911, but we're sure we were there in 1912. He was hardworking and he was very hungry, but I think it was when my grandfather came in that the place really started to flourish. I think my great-grandfather may have started it, but I think it was my grandfather that really gave it the push.
Yeah.
And he said my grandfather used to say they had their best times in the Depression years. So they had a tight, good group. And they did well in the 1930s when the Great Depression was on.
Yeah. And your great-grandfather started, and your grandfather started with government jobs, and then they moved more into the private sector.
Yes, yeah. As everyone can bid on government jobs, so they started on that, and then after their reputation developed, they started doing more private work.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
And so going from one person to over 1,800 now, and obviously you're fourth generation and it's still a privately owned company, how do you, like, what are some things that you've seen over the years and through the generations of raising your children and the families, and how you guys have been raised to have that strong leadership all the way through?
It's more, this will sound a little strange. I think the reason we have survived is that there's only been one child brought in in each generation. My grandfather and his brother worked here, but my great uncle was a minor player, I think.
Mm.
That's certainly a company, especially a construction company, falls to pieces once there's uncles and aunties and cousins and everything involved. So that's what I've told my children. I've got four children. I said only one of you are coming in. The oldest one gets first option, yeah, and he's taken that option up.
And his name's Jack as well.
Yes, yes, it is. Yeah.
In the family, that's
well, right. Actually, all our names are John. Everyone gets named John, but no one gets called John. We don't know why. Jack is short for John, and Scott is my middle name.
Mm-hmm.
So my first name's John. Dad's first name's John. My grandfather and great grandfather's name's John.
And the nickname is Jack.
Yeah. No, there's no sense to it. There's no.
I think it's nice. It's a great legacy that you've got going on.
Well, I don't know if it's a legacy. It's but it's a something that's happened. Yeah.
Yeah, and so you guys obviously have a lot of projects going on.
We do,
all around the country. And do you have any internationally at the moment?
No, we've only ever done three internationally, and one in New Zealand, one in Canada, and one in Japan, and we've seen no reason to stay there. So we've gone, done the work successfully, then come back out.
Why are we selected specifically for those?
Our clients wanted us in those places. The one in New Zealand and Canada were for my father-in-law who wanted us to do the jobs over there.
Yeah.
And the one in Japan was being a block of units on at a ski field. It was being sold to Brisbane people, and they wanted to know that there was a Brisbane builder in charge of it. So
okay.
Mm.
And I've read on your website, perhaps, or in an article, that you guys, there's no job too big or too small for you guys. My grandma yesterday said she'd love Hutchies to build her next house. Well, I said, I think that's a little bit small.
Well,
you guys don't do resi, do you?
No, we don't do project homes, but we do expensive houses.
Mm.
But we also do a $10,000 or a $5,000 fit out to a business, or we'll put somebody's back steps on if they want us to do that. So we do $5,000 and $10,000 jobs all the time, actually. Especially an awning fell down the other day, and somebody rang us and said, "Can you please get somebody out here on a Sunday?" And we sent people out and fixed it up. Yeah.
Yeah.
So obviously you have work all around the country happening at the moment. How do you make sure that the quality of work that's going on all around is of a high standard?
That's something our managing director is really good at, is quality. And we've got a quality team and a handbook, but a really strict implementation process. And but the real way you get quality is by using people that have been with the company for a long time. People you know, really good finishing foremen. So it's a combination of that. But I just believe we've got quality sorted out in the last decade the way it has to be, as everybody is demanding that, legislatively as well as sales-wise. Opal Towers has sent a shockwave through the whole place as well.
Okay.
You know the story there.
I don't
that.
Actually.
Oh, that's the one, the job in Sydney that where cracks started forming in columns, and the whole building had to evacuate.
That's right.
So I think that was Christmas 1 year ago. So
no good.
That wasn't ours, by the way.
Yeah.
Make sure that gets that played well into ours, because we've never had any problems like that.
Oh, that's good.
And we never would, yeah.
Mm. So if you could look back over the last 108 years and and pick out just two major things that have really formulated over the years, two things that you've really learnt from so many years in business that's now a key factor in how you do things, what would they be?
The biggest change that's made the company grow is we introduced an external managing director in 2001. The business was getting that big. The dad and I just said, look, we need somebody that's been selected from tens of thousands of people, not your four children.
Yeah.
And Dad said, there's a guy at the Master Builders that could run BHP. So we brought him on and he's done wonders. And he's still here. Greg Quinn, he's played rugby league for Queensland. A chippy himself, he's been amazing. So that's probably the biggest change that's to the company, getting an external managing director. And I think in the 19 years he's been here, I can't think of he and I having one argument. And everybody predicted I wouldn't let go, but I have. I'm chairman now, not managing director.
And he was the first person you brought in who wasn't family, is that correct?
The first person to run the company that wasn't family, yes, yeah.
And so how do you keep good morale amongst the subbies and and those guys and the tradesmen?
Well, again, there's a lot of things you do, but you just try and make the place that you work, the place that you'd like to work.
You throw some good parties.
We don't, we're not politically correct. We throw good parties and we celebrate things. We still celebrate Guy Fawkes Night and anybody can do that. A team can have their own party without asking permission from anybody. And people do celebrate things. On good jobs, some teams have taken their whole team to Las Vegas to celebrate without asking permission.
Wow.
So it's
great fun.
Giving people. I think the biggest thing is giving people, empowering people to make their own decisions and try things without the fear of making mistakes.
Yeah.
And without the fear of being punished for making mistakes.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Great way to lead and have a guided team.
Yeah, but you do get mistakes, but we learn and move on.
Good. So how do you assess a mistake or a so-called mistake and learn from it and then move on? Do you have a meeting about it?
Well, I'll give you an example of something that we like people to try. Say we've had a tilt-up concrete team formed. Some team just said, I think we should have a go at this. So we'll do that for 6 months, then it won't work, so we'll close it down. No one has to account for it starting up or closing when it didn't, when it stopped working, closing it it down, yeah. And then we might discuss, you know, what went wrong. As long as things are monitored and mistakes aren't just made and forgotten about, mm-hmm. I think it's a healthy, productive thing to happen.
Yeah, I think so too. So you said you got you're the chairman now of Functions and Builders. How did your family prepare you for the role? How did you prepare yourself?
The biggest effect on me being chairman or even operating in Hutchies was doing the MBA in the early 80s at University of Queensland, the Master of Business Administration. I'm a structural engineer and I hated engineering and was a poor engineer.
Mm-hmm.
And but when I went back to do the MBA, I did all the human resource subjects I could. And a lot of Hutchie's culture and the way we go about things comes from mid-80s management theory.
Is that the flat line?
The flat structure, intra-capital empowerment, all that stuff was new and exciting and interesting, and I loved it. And Dad, to his credit, was pretty much doing it anyway, but then allowed me to do it more so. And also, to his credit, our managing director walked into this strange culture and said he's never seen anything operate like this, but he adjusted to it. And then I've sent my son, Jack, over to London to do his MBA at London Business School, and he's done every human resources subject he can, because your people are the main thing.
Yeah.
The people are what you are. So I think that's been my focus. I don't think there's been any other preparation other than that, except sending me to do engineering and then letting me do the MBA.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it seems like you're doing a great role. When I walked in here, the vibe was very relaxed yet professional, and
thank you.
It's a really great place to walk into.
Yeah, there seems to be a good vibe, and if there was ever going to be a bad vibe, now's the time to have it. We don't usually have a book at the front desk where people sign in and sign out. We don't keep tabs on people. We trust them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have to at the moment because of this terrible virus, but generally we don't.
Yeah. So how is something like this? This virus and impending potential economic downturn, how are you guys preparing for it?
Economic downturns are no problem. We do better. It's the upswing that catches builders. I know that sounds counterintuitive, but you get caught with a low price, and then when things get busy, your subcontractors and suppliers increase their prices,
mm-hmm.
and you get caught. So on the downswing, it's not that bad. The virus is hard because there's nothing coming in. There'll be no work being tendered on. We've got about $3.5 billion worth of work to do, though. So it's business as usual on many of our sites. And right now, the government and the unions are saying these sites must stay open. And everybody's cooperating.
Oh, that's great.
It's good. It's good, yeah. it's frustrating because everybody's so down, but it's not that bad.
Yeah, I think it's been managed quite well, and it's good to see some people still working and going about business as best they can. Myself, my partner and our flatmate, we're all working that's from home. Good. So
yeah, I'd love to have Coles or Woolies.
Stock,
yeah.
They're, or toilet paper.
Oh, the toilet paper thing. I loved Scott Morrison last night saying, everyone, just stop it.
Yeah.
He said, it's un-Australian. It was so funny because it is so stupid.
It is silly.
I mean, as if toilet paper is your biggest problem if you're going to be in lockdown.
Yeah.
So,
at least it's provided us with a good joke, something to laugh about.
Oh, it's insane. You talk to the shopkeepers and they said it's crazy. Someone got tasered the other day
really?
for fighting over toilet paper. So you could understand it if they were starving and fighting over food, but getting tasered over a toilet paper fight, it's insane.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it?
I was
looking at your Hutchinson honeybees.
Yes.
How much honey are you producing per year now?
It's huge. I just thought it was wonderful that to have hives on the top of all our offices.
You're a bit of an environmentalist, right?
We have a... I drive an electric car. I do my bit, but I'm not... I fly. I'm not Greta Thunberg, but I try and we try and do our bit. And we've got an incredibly good environmentally sustainable design team, and so they guided me on which car to get, and they're good cars.
Is it
the BMW? Yeah. And it's been. You would have seen it coming in the door. It gets charged from. Yeah, a little naughty car that. Gets charged from the roof of the building. The sun charges the car. But the honeybees just say everything positive. They give you a wonderful gift that you can give away. They say hard work. Birds and bees has a connotation. It says environmentalism, and towns and. Townsville and Cairns just supply that much honey. They send it back to Brisbane in barrels. They can't. They can't deal with the amount of that they're getting up there. And the
I read it was over 1.2 ton. Is that?
I think it's probably about that. We don't keep track of it because the offices themselves give it away.
How do you access it? You have to wear the suits.
We try and get professional aviaries. We've got some flow hives.
Yeah,
but there's a lot more to looking after bees than just raiding the hives. So we like to have a professional aphorist. I'm saying it correctly to do it because we have had problems. We've had queens die, and you've got to get the right amount of sunlight on them. But Townsville and Cairns have got it, so.
So they're on the rooftops of your buildings around Australia.
Yeah. If you look outside, we aren't trying to own our own buildings in every office we have, and so we can put honeybees on the roof.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, and there's always at each office there's a captain of honey, so he looks after the honey or gets an aviarist to do it.
Oh, that's great. I'm a vegan, so I've reduced my honey intake, but lately we've been eating a bit. We buy from an organic market. But,
so you're a part-time vegan.
No, I'm full-time. I'm full-fledged, Scott, but it's just the honey. The honey is just so delicious as a sweetener.
Yeah. What's the downside of honey? It's just full of sugar, isn't it?
For a vegan?
Yeah.
It's ethically for the bees when you raid their hive. Sometimes they get squashed or you're taking their food. So that's the philosophy behind it.
They exist.
Yeah, and you've got a hive on top of your buildings all around Oz. So
you're
creating a home for more bees, which I think is fantastic.
Well, the other thing is if the bees die, there's a theory that the planet dies. So that's what we're doing.
Well, that's the argument for vegans. They think that the more honey they consume, the more demand for it globally, and the more bees die from being stressed out.
Well, though the more honey we consume, the more bees that there will be, the more pollen that will get transferred, the more plants that will grow.
True.
So, and that argument goes round in circles, but that's not what this interview is about.
Yeah, no worries. Well, I think it's cool what you're doing with
Thank
honeybees
you.
Anyway.
Thank you. Yeah.
And I do eat honey, so.
Well, I'll give you some before you go. I've got it in the cheesiest bottle I could find, a heart-shaped one. I wanted to really make it a cheesy sort of thing.
So you give it away to guests, friends, and Hutchie staff.
Yeah, the main thing we do. So if we're sponsoring a function, we put a bottle for each person on each table.
Nice.
And you watch the sometimes the pens or the cups or the whatever other gifts people leave get left there. Mm-hmm. Never the honey. Never the honey. Yeah. Our honey always gets taken.
Yeah.
Which we're very proud of.
Oh, that's very cool. I think it's cool. I think it's awesome. So I'm not sure if you're happy to chat about this, but the Queen's Wharf job that Multiplex and you guys were both tendered for.
Yeah.
What did you learn from that process, or why do you think that you lost?
Well, if you want a job like that, you've got to really want it.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't really want it. I think the team we put on it really wanted it. I was iffy about it. It was big. It had a lot of areas that were provisional sums. We had to argue over costs later on. Mm. It seemed quite combative to me, and
more trouble than it's worth.
And it would soak up one of our biggest and most competent team completely.
Mm.
So that's all they do, and they can do six other jobs instead of that job. So we went in hard-ish, but we didn't go in as hard as Multiplex, and we knew they may want it more than us, but and it didn't worry us. Also, we didn't, when we put the tender in, we didn't start shaking the tree to try and get another shot. And,
yeah.
So we put in a good effort, and we probably spent $1 million on the tender, but we weren't going to do a loss leader, if you like.
So it's probably a good lesson for the audience to learn from you guys, in that sense that if a job is massive and it looks great and, you know, publicity-wise it's probably appealing, but in terms of the energy and the resources that would be taken away from Archie's, it's perhaps not worth it. So sometimes it's worthwhile letting these things go if they...
Well, it's a glamour job.
Mm.
I'm over glamour. We just didn't need it as much as Multiplex wanted it. So good luck to them. I hope it goes well. The client we're working with on another site, and they're good clients, and things are going well. So
yeah.
we would have been, if we'd won it, I probably would have been popping champagne. So I'm not being coy about this, but I was also half relieved when we didn't win it.
Yeah. So. Oh, there's pros and cons to every job, mm-hmm. I guess.
Yeah,
sounds like the cons for that one were quite large.
Oh, and for the record, I'm happy to talk about anything.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know. Well, yeah, that sounds like you guys are doing great things. And so what, at the moment, what would you say your biggest job is?
Oh, one of the biggest, probably the biggest, is $180 million for... the casino down the coast.
Wow.
Gold so Coast. Which is half the client of the Queen's Wharf.
Mm.
So that's going well.
Yeah.
And we've got some big similar sized jobs in Sydney,
yeah,
and Melbourne. So we've got a few $160 million, $170 million, $180 million jobs, and we've just finished a $400 million one.
Oh, wow.
With the Sky Tower.
Yeah.
Which went
that
well.
That's great.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Yeah, it's the tallest tower in Brisbane, and will be forever the tallest, because the airport dictates how tall buildings
are. How high is it now?
I don't know, but it's about 90 stories.
Wow.
I think it's the same level as the Meriton buildings, mm-hmm, but because we started on a lower ground level, ours is actually taller.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to live in one of the Meritons on 58, and that, mm-hmm, was pretty cool.
Was it?
Sometimes there'd be fog down here.
Under you.
And I'd see the sunshine, and then I'd go downstairs, it'd be a gloomy day. So that was really cool. It was like being in the sky, like Sky Tower. All right. So we've spoken about the honeybees and how much you're producing and some great, mm-hmm, jobs you're doing around, a bit of your history. Do you still the bunkers. I read something about the bunkers around Brisbane for the World War II.
Oh, yes, that was in my great-granddad and my granddad's day. Yeah, we did a few of those bunkers. I think they're not. It's not all known where they are, even, but some of them have been dug up.
Yeah.
Yeah. My grandfather was too old for World War II and my father too young.
Yeah.
So...
That's lucky.
Yeah, well, yeah, you say lucky, but everyone tried to do their... Well, my other grandfather went to Fort New Guinea. Mm. But again, in World War One, my great-grandfather was too old and my grandfather was too young. So we've missed all the walls.
You guys have built some really cool historical buildings around Brisbane.
Yeah, yeah. A lot have been knocked down, of course, because that's how cities are, and that's how Brisbane is. Brisbane knocks down some stuff they shouldn't.
Yeah.
All towns do, but I'm trying to put some good ones up.
So what's the next music site?
We're going to have a crack at the river stage.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It needs... what happens now is... and I've just returned from Melbourne where I saw New Order at the Maya Music Bowl. 15,000 people.
Wow.
Just before the order came in that no one's allowed to congregate.
Yeah.
So New Order were fantastic. But ours is better... the river stage is better, except we don't have enough cover and we don't have the sound system they do. The sound system at the moment at the river stage just blurs out everywhere and annoys everybody. And if you go to a concert in the rain, everyone gets wet.
Yeah.
We've got to change that a little bit, but we still want to keep the grass and we still want that wonderful egalitarian feel where you can arrive late and go in wherever you want to.
That's gorgeous.
Yeah, it's magic, but it's got its problems.
Yeah.
And we'd love to lease that from the government and fix it up.
Yeah.
And we've, again, it's not a commercial thing. I'm trying to help.
So where has your love of music come from?
Oh, just from going out.
Yeah.
I just...
You travelled around Europe back in the day with a band, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That wasn't so music was related. No. Well, we went to shows, but I'd probably go to 12 festivals a year now. Yeah. I'd be going to more now. I go to Burning Man every year. I was going to Lollapalooza, Sweden.
Coachella?
Coachella I've been to. It's no good.
Okay.
The acts are fantastic. The festival is devoid of spirit and life.
Mm-hmm.
We went to Lollapalooza, Brazil, last year. Yeah, just go to different ones. Glastonbury, nice. Fuji Fest. Yeah, that's what I'd like to continue to do. As I,
you love the atmosphere.
I just love celebration and music and everybody going crazy. It was, the feeling at New Order. 15,000 people when there was a impending disaster coming. Everybody completely forgot about it. Whether that's good or bad, I don't know, but we were all very happy.
Yeah. So who are your top two bands?
Oh, Iggy Pop. Yeah. He's just my hero. I don't know who's... I haven't ever thought about who's second. Look, I've seen... Lou Reed a couple of times. The Arctic Monkeys, if you're looking for somebody modern and relevant, but there's a whole lot of acts I'd put just under Iggy, but there's nobody in Iggy's class.
Yeah,
he's just Elvis and the Beatles and everything rolled into one.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, yeah, and he's I love the way he's at the top of his game now at 73.
Yeah.
And he couldn't make a quid in his 30s and 40s. He was unrecognised. And then quickly people started to realise how important he was and how good he is. And we saw him at the Opera House, I think it was this year, and he was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. And I'll have to get to a show.
Oh, you've got to, you must. I took my daughter, who's 16, and she's cynical and saw it as... old punter music, I think. And then she came away and just said, "Dad, that was unbelievable."
Oh, cool.
That was, yeah. So
I'll get to the next one for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I follow him around Australia if he plays.
Yeah.
So I follow him anywhere. Yeah.
The oldest I've seen is Fleetwood Mac. They're yeah. fantastic. And not Alice Cooper, who is it?
Oh, Alice Cooper.
No, it wasn't Alice Cooper. It was You Give Love a Bad Name. Who's that?
Oh, Bon Jovi. John Bon Jovi. Oh, that would have been... I've seen him. He's terrible.
It was okay.
Oh, and I saw Fleetwood... Oh, I'm giving away my age. I saw Fleetwood Mac in 1979. Yeah. They were good, but I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
It's pop. And I'm...
The entertainment value wasn't hugely there. I think modern entertainment's like Pink are really cool. You know, upside yeah. down singing and things like yeah. that. I value that. Kind of well, energy.
That's pop. That's all pop.
Mm.
And when pop's done well, like as you say, Pink or Lana Del Rey, it's good,
mm.
but it's not my genre. But I still go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's punk or psychedelic punk or that sort of end of the music spectrum.
Yeah.
That is my genre. The Black Lips.
Queen.
And no, not Queen. Not Queen. I'm not that's with pop. It, am I? No, you're not expected to know the genres. The Queen was pop, cheesy pop. But they've built into something amazing. But I remember somebody playing me A Night at the Races or A Day at the Opera, and them raving about it when it first came out.
Yeah.
I said, "Oh, this is rubbish." But
horses for
courses. Yeah, they've gone and even their tribute shows are.
I wouldn't see a tribute. I'd want to see the original.
Yeah, at Trifford we do tribute shows, and they're very successful.
Okay.
Yeah, we have a local bands playing The Cure,
mm-hmm.
or Fleetwood Mac. What amazed me at the Fleetwood Mac tribute show was the young people who knew every word, and yet a lot of the stuff was from before they were born.
Yeah.
I keep on forgetting that the music for people my age, we heard it in waves, but you guys got it all at once. You heard the Beatles and punk and...
My parents used to have parties on their balcony in Blah Blah in the Sunshine Coast, and I would go to sleep listening to all these bands, you know, Presidents and Fleetwood and all these bands, Queen.
Nearly every musician recognises that their parents' music collection was the major influence on their life.
And I'd pinch my mum's CDs and play them in my CD player, and learn all the words to. I even learnt the words to "Cover of the Rolling Stone." Who sings that?
Oh, Dr. Hook. Yeah, Dr.
Hook. Like these wild bands.
You were brought up on pop, but that's good. That's good. So
I learned all these songs back from my parents.
Wow, I haven't thought about Dr. Hook for a while.
Yeah.
Sylvia's mother.
Yeah. Yeah, all the words. Yeah. All right. Well, Scott, last question. Sure. You've got a great energy about you, and
Thank you. You
lead an amazing company who's making waves in Queensland and all around Australia. So, what's the legacy you want to leave after you're gone?
Hutchie's staying alive, and that's the business legacy. It doesn't have to grow, or it just has to be a good place to work and to stay alive. I want to leave Brisbane music venues, inner city music venues, so people can go out, see great bands, and on the way home maybe see a different band, so people are drawn into music, and that's not going to happen with venues on the outskirts of town. One weird thing is, since we've launched, and it's not, we're only the landlords, but since they've launched Fortitude Music Hall, a lot more people have been going to Triffid. So what's happening is people are going to see a really good venue and saying, let's go and see more live music.
Yeah.
So that's what's happening. And I'm proud to have a small effect on that. And yeah, that's probably what I'm most proud of, I think.
Yeah.
Because cool. It's cost me money. It hasn't made money, that's for sure.
Well, it's clearly something you're really passionate about.
Yeah, it'll make money for my second son, perhaps. But I'm going to so leave those sites so tied up that he will not be able to knock those things down and put 350 units on top of them.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great legacy to leave. And
thank you.
Hopefully people listening to this podcast in years and decades to come will thank you for it. So.
I hope they're still operating well after I'm dead.
Yeah, I'm sure they will.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in with me as your host, Elise Grace. Do me a favor and drop me a review on iTunes, or if you're watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe. Would love to know what you guys think of the podcast. It helps me keep creating killer content just like this. If you want to stay up to date with all my movements, please check me out on social media at Elise Grace.